Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Would it surprise you to hear that there are a number of conditions that are preventable and cost the NHS a great deal every year? This has been revealed by a recent research conducted by Opinion Matters for Uniquely Health. To talk us through the research findings, on the line is Dr. Jim Robinson from Uniquely Health. Good evening, Dr. Robinson.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Thank you for joining us this evening. Why did you commission this research from Opinion Matters, and what have you learned from it, and what are you going to do with it?
So we conducted the research to try to find out how people prioritise their health compared to other aspects of their lives. And the results were fairly surprising. We found that people put quite a lot of things above their health, and they're laudable things that they're prioritizing. It's things like family, young families, looking after elderly relatives, the family generation doing both of those, or looking after their careers. But we wanted to see just how many people thought that they would class themselves as healthy, and only 49% of the people that we surveyed thought that they would class as healthy. So not only are we prioritizing other things, but we still know that we're doing it to the detriment of our health. And what we're sort of challenging people to do, really, I guess, is to see what you can do to move your health up the priorities list. Because there's only so long that you can prioritize other things. You can do it for a certain amount of time, but eventually it will come back to get you. And that's why we're looking at these conditions that you mentioned, the preventable ones, like type 2 diabetes and high blood pressure, high cholesterol, that sort of thing.
And how surprised were you from the results?
Well, I think we knew that people would be finding it challenging to find time for their health. We all do. I think life has become so much more pressured than it used to be. There's so many more demands on our time, and work has bled into the evenings and the mornings, and social media has given us so many more things to do and life hacks, and there's just so many demands on our time. I think we just wanted to show that and see what impact that's having on us. There's been other stats that have come out today about the amount of people around the world who are living with obesity and other actions that Scotland are taking to try and reduce the amount of unhealthy foods that are being advertised. So these things are at the top of our minds, I think, and they're out there, but it's not translating into action.
One thing that gets me rattled is when you go to the supermarket and you find the unhealthy food is on offer and the healthy food isn't. Now, that doesn't seem right. I mean, that's down to the supermarkets, of course. But, you know, if you're looking for a bargain, you always find things like donuts or biscuits or whatever on reduced or, you know, bog-off offers kind of thing, when really it should be focused on fruit and veg. Is there anything that you can do to change the thinking of supermarkets?
Yeah, I think that is a real problem, isn't it? And I think that with the cost of living crisis as well, I think people are looking for cheaper food. They're looking for bargains, and those often ultra processed, high calorie foods tend to be cheaper to start off with anyway. And so it's a bit of a double whammy, isn't it? You're already starting with something cheaper, and then it's been discounted even further. And people are like, well, I've got less money to spend. I don't know what to feed the family this week. I'll get that because it's cheaper. And so I think the government could have a part to play here putting a lot more resources into subsidizing foods that are better for us rather than foods which are not quite so good for us. But there are ways of eating healthily for less. A lot of fruit is not necessarily that expensive. I think things like berries can be quite expensive, but there are fruits and vegetables that are cheaper. But in terms of stopping the supermarkets from doing that, I think that's what Scotland are looking at doing at the moment. The UK, England policies didn't go quite so far last year. So I think there is a bit of pressure coming, but it's not strong enough, and often it focuses on the wrong thing.
But ultimately, you mentioned the government there. So, I mean, we can't go and sort of point things at the government or any government, really, because ultimately we are responsible for what we put in our mouths.
Yeah, but I think we're struggling to know what the right things are, though. And I think there's been a lot of debate over the years about should we be having low-fat food, should we be having carb-free foods. And I think what we're learning now and the studies that are being done are showing that everyone's individual and some things work in terms of weight for some people and other things don't. And there are some unifying rules that are coming through, like the fact that we should be having whole grains and whole foods and coming away from ultra-processed foods. And I think that's more the sort of line that we as doctors ought to be taking and encouraging people to do, rather than trying to sort of say eat less, move more, which has never really worked, but has been said for the last 50 years or so.
You mentioned some of the preventable conditions a moment ago. Can you expand on a few more that the NHS spends most of its budget on?
Yeah, so the ones that you start with, with sort of poorer metabolic health, are things like type 2 diabetes, and before that there's pre-diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and obesity. And those form part of this thing called the metabolic syndrome, which then leads on to other conditions such as stroke and heart attack and dementia, vascular dementia. So it has quite a long pathway through your life that may only start with obesity but end up with dementia.
Okay, but what do you believe that we should be doing to combat this? Because, you know, we can help ourselves. That's the whole point of this, to an extent, of course.
Yeah, and I think that there are things that we can all do. And I know that I can be a lot better as well. I do my best, but I could definitely be better. So there are small things that we can do. And I think we try to get people to think about adding things in first rather than taking things away. You know, if I go to somebody and say, you know, you need to stop eating all of your snacks and your sweets, they're going to be, well, that sounds rubbish. I don't want to do that. But if you say, well, fine, say as you are, but add in an item of fruit a day, or add in an extra vegetable on the side of your meal, and then you might be not quite so inclined to have such a large dessert after that. Or you might say, well, okay, let's look at exercise instead. You have got a very sedentary job. You're walking fewer than 5,000 steps a day. Maybe at the end of each working day, leave your trainers by the front door. When you come home, get out of your work shoes, put your trainers on and just go for a 5-minute walk or a 2-minute walk, and make that part of your evening routine. And then you can start to build on that. You can build a habit and have what we call habit stack. You can add on to that, and start to become a healthier person, have a healthier regime, without actually changing everything all at once, which is where we often go wrong. We go in all guns blazing and try and change everything about our lives and can't stick with it because it's too radical a change.
What more would you like to see the NHS and the government do to educate us all about this?
That's a tricky question. I think the NHS is overstretched in all areas at the moment, and its focus is very much on treatment. There isn't much of a focus on prevention at the moment. I don't think it currently has the bandwidth. I know that my own GP surgery and most of the GPs that I talk to wouldn't have the bandwidth to start really dealing with prevention. But I think that's where I think we need some kind of governmental support that's looking more at lifestyle medicine, a preventable disease that needs to run alongside the treatment of disease through general practice. And so I think it's something we're going to have to sort of wake up to, that it's going to take quite a lot of money, it's going to take investment, it's going to take time from clinicians such as myself to try and work on that sort of thing and get a message out there that gets to people that actually works.
The research that you commissioned showed that 63.5% of the UK are obese. Firstly, can you define to me and help me understand what are we saying is obese? How do we define that? And why do you think that figure is so high?
So the statements of the obesity comes after overweight when you're looking at someone's BMI. Now, the BMI is not a perfect way of looking at whether or not people have an unhealthy weight. people who are extremely muscular, for instance, will have a higher weight to height ratio, which is what this is. So that would say that they have a high BMI, and so a bodybuilder would class as morbidly obese, perhaps. So it's not a particularly, it's not the be-all and end-all as a metric. But it gives us an idea. It tells us that probably the majority of people are living with obesity in this country. But one of the surprising statistics we got from the research was that a lot of people haven't weighed themselves in the last 4 years. And that was only 70% of people haven't weighed themselves. So whether that's that they're not, they don't want to, they don't want to know, or whether that it's too scary, I understand that as well, and that they haven't weighed themselves for that reason. So it also suggests that perhaps the data that we have isn't as up-to-date as we think it is as well. That obesity data might be looking at, you know, a weight from 4 years ago, and things may be a lot worse from then.
I mean, it's fair to say I'm carrying a little bit too much weight. I certainly wouldn't say I'm obese, and my doctor doesn't say that I am. However, if I was to look at my height-to-weight ratio against the BMI matrix, I think my ideal weight for somebody who is 6'4" and built like the proverbial, I think my ideal weight should be around sort of 13 to 14 stone. I'm not kidding you. If I was 13 to 14 stone, I'd look ill, and I'd look like a xylophone on with my ribs. They would invariably show. So is that not flawed?
Yeah, that, as I said, it's not a perfect measure, and there are better ways of doing it. You can look at body composition. There's quite a lot of things like smart scales out there that can tell you what your fat percentage is. And for some people, that's a better way of looking at it. Or you can get people who are serious about it, get calipers and that sort of squeeze the subcutaneous fat and tell you what your fat percentage is. So that's partly why what we do is we don't just look at BMI at Uniquely Health. We look at the whole person. We do a full set of blood tests. We look at what your exercise regime is like. We look at what your diet is like and examine every single thing that you're eating across the time that you're with us. And that's the sort of thing that we don't really have time to do in the NHS at the moment, but that's what we should be working towards.
How apathetic are we when it comes to our health then?
I think everyone's different. I think we'd all like to be healthier, or most of us would like to be healthier, but it's quite hard. And that was what we were looking at with the priorities. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've come home from a busy day at work, you've got to put three kids to bed, as I'm about to do. You're then getting tired after that day, and the idea of then going, well, I'm just going to go and do a kettlebell class for an hour, is quite a big ask. Or it's just quite easy to sit down and log onto your phone and order a meal over the internet to be delivered to your house that tastes good and makes you feel good. So I think it's easy. It's much, much, much easier to have an unhealthy lifestyle. It's a battle to live healthily.
I think it's fatal, as you say, that when you get home, that you simply plonk yourself down on the sofa. And if you're anything like me, I mean, some nights I don't get in till really quite late, depending on where I am and what I'm doing. You know, the last thing you want to do is go out and do anything like that. And once you sit on the sofa, you can't be bothered to move, to be honest with you.
That sounds familiar. And I think that's going to be a familiar story for a lot of people up and down the country. And that's what I mean. It's hard But over time, the more that people do exercise, the more you do eat healthily, the more it becomes part of a habit, the more it becomes part of you and part of your identity. And at some point, somebody who's going out for a run will say, I'm a runner, rather than I'm going out for a run. Mm-hmm. And once you hit that identity aspect of it, that's when it starts to become part of your usual life.
I mean, two examples here. One of my friends was a type 2 diabetic, had to go into hospital last year for an unrelated operation and didn't eat for a week and a half because of the nature of the operation, lost a load of weight and is no longer diabetic. So, I mean, you know, okay, that's an extreme example, but that was something that through the nature of his operation kind of, you know, alleviated that. And then another friend was practically given the last rites during the week because of their body mass and the food that they were eating and such like. And they are now on a real sort of shock journey to counter all the bad things that they've been eating and their sedentary lifestyle. So that they're literally on the very beginning of their journey. But it does demonstrate that a lot of this we can do ourselves. So what would be your sort of, you know, top three or maybe top five tips about things that we can do to promote our own health?
So I think the first thing is really being clear about the fact that most of these things are reversible, as you say. High blood pressure, high cholesterol, type 2 diabetes, pre-diabetes can all be reversed with the right changes. And that's a really positive thing that people can take away. It's never too late to make any of these changes to your lifestyle. And the next thing is, I think, to be realistic and not to try and do too much too soon. Make small changes, and if they work, feel good about them, praise yourself for them having worked, and then build on them. And try to avoid the fad diets and crash weight plans that you might find on social media that I'm very aware that they exist and can be quite harmful, but also are very hard to stick to. And just because you crash your weight down doesn't mean that it'll stay down. It usually swings back too far the other way, actually. So avoiding the you can lose 10 kilo in 2 weeks type plans, if at all possible. And then try and make it fun. Try and do it with someone. If you're going to go for a walk when you don't normally do so, or you're going to go for a run or whatever it is in terms of exercise, do it with someone else. If you're going to change your diet and swap some things out, do it with people at work. If you have a sort of workplace that has biscuits around the staff room and you want to change it to fruit, ask your employer if they would buy fruit instead of biscuits. You know, try and do it as a team and make it a swap that would benefit more than just yourself, and then it becomes something positive for everybody.
When we get older, though, do our bodies process our food differently from when we were, you know, younger? When I say older, I'm talking sort of 50 plus, because as you get older, you hear stories about people who are trying to lose weight but find it difficult to do so, whereas youngsters are invariably stick insects. And okay, their body metabolism is higher. I mean, when I was in my 20s, which was sort of, you know, late 80s, early 90s, then I was a stick insect. But I think as I sort of hit 45, 50, I mean, I'm 57 next month, then I think my body metabolism slowed, and therefore I find it difficult to lose weight. But, you know, do our bodies change throughout our life cycle? Certainly. And I think, you know, is it fair to say that they find it difficult to process food as we get older?
We certainly find it more difficult to lose weight, I think, as we get older. And it seems to be easier to put it on as well. A lot of that is to do with hormonal changes and the body changing as we get older. And I think, yes, we have to be more careful, sadly, from our sort of 30s, really. You have to be quite a bit more careful about the foods that you eat, and you'll find it easier to gain weight from that time and harder to lose it again. That said, we are seeing a lot more, sadly, we're seeing a lot more childhood obesity than we used to have. So although it's true that children do seem to be able to just burn through whatever they put in their bodies, it's not forever, and we do seem to be having, sadly, some more and more children that we're seeing in the GP clinics who are also living with obesity.
Help me myth bust something then, Dr. Robinson. I heard a story a while ago that antidepressants do sometimes do not help people to lose weight. In fact, they can, to an extent, promote weight gain because of the nature of how they work. Is there any truth in that?
There are certain antidepressants that can increase your appetite. And I think that's one aspect. So there is one that can cause you to gain weight, but only through increasing your appetite. It's really hard, I think, to tease apart the effect of the mental health on your appetite from the antidepressants on your appetite. And then also the fact that often people end up with mental health problems when they've had a very poor diet, and the changes that gives you to your gut. There's a thing called the gut-brain axis. So if you have a very base-rate bland diet, you will end up with lower levels of the good hormones, the happy hormones that you need, because they're absorbed and sort of made in the gut. Mm-hmm. And so you can end up with a lower mood, more likely to be depressed and anxious if you have a very poor diet. So it's there's a lot of interplay there, and the antidepressants do muddy the waters a bit. But you're right, there is an antidepressant or two that can make you hungrier.
Yeah, I thought there was. I mean, as a doctor, does it shock you to hear that not even half of adults believe that they would be classed as healthy by their GP? This is going back to what we were talking about at the beginning.
Yeah, yes, it does shock me, and it's sad. And that's why I'm working on this aspect of life. I want to try and help people to have more confidence in their selves and their bodies, and to feel healthier and through it to feel happier. And I think it's a societal problem, and hopefully we'll get there. But it's going to take time and a change in messaging and a change in a lot of our practices as a country, I think.
Where can we find out more information, Dr. Robinson?
So for us, our website is uniquely.health, and we also have a LinkedIn profile with some really interesting webinars on there about some of the stuff that we've been talking about here. And those webinars are also on the Facebook profile for Uniquely Health as well.
Okay, so your website, uniquely.health, it's as simple as that.
That's right. It is, yeah.
Dr. Jim Robinson from Uniquely Health, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 6:00 p.m. And if you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by me, Clive Payne, and produced by Andy Caddick.